As you might know if you ventured outside already this Sunday, it's pretty Baltic out there. There is a snow and ice warning across all Irish counties, as you've been hearing on the news. And while some people might be dreaming of a white Christmas, the weather hasn't always been quite so kind. It is now a little over 70 years since the big snow. And you know that something was big when Ireland has just christened it with a single title like that, the big snow. Sadly, not really a laughing matter, because dozens of lives were lost. Ireland ground to a complete halt, pounded by the most powerful storm that Ireland experienced in the entire 20th century. Other people felt it might have been the end of a government. To some people, it felt like it was the end of the world. And Donald Fallon is here, as you can hear, in studio, chuckling away.
Good to be here.
But, you know, comedy equals tragedy plus time, really, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a really remarkable story.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hibernia, the classical Latin for Ireland. Hibernia is the younger sister and the better-looking sister of Britannia.
Yeah,
Hibernia means the land of constant winter.
Yeah. It never has it been truer than in 1947. I always think that one's mad. Like, they literally, that even the Romans, millennia ago, the Romans were like, out there, nippy,
land
nippy.
Of constant winter.
Today, of course, conditions like those of 1947 would lead people to incredible panic.
Absolutely. You know, there was no Greta Thunberg in 1947, but, you know, if there was, I imagine people would have sat up and paid attention. I mean, 71 years ago, this was freakish. It was totally unprecedented in living memory, and it will never be forgotten, you know, by anyone who lived through it. And, you know, to many, 1947, while a lot of things happened that year in Ireland, it's synonymous with one thing and one thing only, the big snow. So basically, we experienced an Arctic cold snap, five major blizzards within it. And this went on from the 19th of January to the 15th of March.
Mm.
So that is basically 2 months of intense
This
weather.
Isn't like the Beast from the East a couple of years ago, where it's a 3 or 4 day wonder. This is sustained.
4 days. This is the guts of 7 weeks of incredible weather. And it came across Ireland in waves, you know, first kind of making its presence felt in Leinster and Munster. But on one day, the 25th of February, it snowed for 50 consecutive hours across every county in Ireland. And it would be 3 weeks before the snow would begin to melt after that. So this is a really extraordinary moment, and anyone who lived through it will never forget 1947.
Put this back in context for us. What was Ireland like in 1947?
Broke. I mean, the main word is broke.
Okay.
And, you know, we had endured the worst, the economic kind of suffering of World War II without the kind of political jubilation that the winning nations got, because we'd been neutral in the conflict. So, I mean, incredibly, I mean, on the neighbouring island, they managed to construct the National Health Service from 1945. They'd been in the war, we hadn't been in the war, and we were still rationing food in Ireland. You know, rationing went on several years longer in Ireland than it did in the UK. So Ireland in the second half of the 1940s is not a country that's particularly able or ready to take on a crisis like what literally fell on us from the sky.
So talk to us then about the impact of something like this. And imagine in a fairly underdeveloped 1940s Ireland, the transport is one of the first things to go.
It's the first victim, unsurprisingly, the transportation system. And I mean, if you were lucky, you lived in a town that was connected by train directly to a major city, because trains really had some hope, but rural roads basically became impossible to get through and impassable. And the abiding popular memory of the crisis, and I've talked to people who lived through this, the one thing they remember is the abandoned bicycles. And we're not talking 100 bicycles, we're talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of bicycles just abandoned across the island of Ireland. And slowly, you know, in March when the snow began to melt, you saw these bicycles appearing again in the roadside.
Lovely and clean.
Lovely and clean, yeah. Buses were an impossibility as well. So transportation just grinds to a halt. And if you don't live, you know, relatively close to a large town, you're in an awful lot of trouble.
Politically then, that must have been very difficult. Because aside from all the humanitarian stuff and the impact of trying to make lives work, naturally people are going to be pretty aggrieved at the state for not doing whatever it can.
Absolutely. And, you know, the government had weathered the storm of the emergency, I think, with some success. I mean, to their credit, they built air raid shelters. Not sure how much use some of the air raid shelters were, but they built air raid shelters. You know, they provided supplies and they had a defence force during the war that was ready and able to defend Ireland in the event, well, maybe not able, but definitely ready to defend Ireland in the event of the worst. But then in 47, it's amazing to compare, you know, how they respond to European war with how they respond to this very local problem. And one Fianna Fáil deputy, Patrick McGrath, he complains that it takes him 12 hours on a train journey to get from Cork to Dublin, which is unimaginable to us today. But I think Kevin Cairns is the main historian of the storm. He's right about one thing. You know, he says the government wasn't faulted, of course, for causing the cold and blizzards, but was held responsible for failing to respond vigorously to the resulting emergencies. In other words, you know, the weather is a crisis of God, but how you respond on the ground is very much up to the government of the day. And a couple of big mistakes. One, They don't put the army out in the streets en masse to kind of assist the ESB and the post office in restoring communication. And we're very good at that today. You know, whenever there's bad weather, it's the army that are out with the sandbags. And I think for older people in particular, it kind of calms the nerves a little bit when you see the army out there on the streets.
The state's doing what it can.
The state's doing all it can. I mean, you could use the army to bring turf to the fireless. And dozens of people die, I think totally preventable deaths, because I have this sense in rural Ireland, no one's coming for us. You know, there's no one on the way. Mm. And I think the human instinct is, when that happens, that you want to leave your house and you want to find assistance wherever you can get it.
So people go venturing out and then they fall victim.
Which is the worst thing you can do. You know, stay where you are. And the criticism of the government comes from really unusual quarters. I mean, the Irish Press newspaper is basically...
This is the time of De Valera, of course. This is towards the tail end of his time as Taoiseach, in the 1940s.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can't libel a newspaper that doesn't exist anymore. But the Irish Press was basically the Fianna Fáil newspaper. That's what it was, whether it pretended to be something else or not. But The Independent has the most damning editorial, one of the most damning editorials I've ever read in an Irish newspaper. This country has an army. The snowstorms, with their resultant chaos and traffic conditions and isolated areas, presents a problem that soldiers would have gladly tackled. Here was a job to be done for the people, to get food and fuel to the houses, medical aid, travellers who were stranded, but the army wasn't called upon to help. It sounds unbelievable, yet it's true. The members of the government sat snugly and smugly in government buildings and did nothing. Now, that's not a criticism of the army. An army can only respond to what it's told to do. An army answers to the government, and it was a failure of government and not the army.
So when you have people who are venturing out, particularly in rural Ireland, looking for whatever help they can get and probably succumbing to the terrible conditions that are out there while they're there, you're probably talking deaths in the hundreds, but there are still some stories which are still so harrowing that they jump out.
Awful story from just around the corner where I live, the water quarry on Sundrive Road in Crumlin that's frozen over. And as always happens when lakes and the like freeze over, kids play on them. You know, children were playing football and the like in the frozen water, and basically the local Garda station had tried everything they could to stop these kids doing this, but every time you sent them away they were back in a couple of hours.
Sure.
Second of May you have 20 kids 2nd of March, pardon me, 20 kids playing a game of hockey and the ice just gives way underneath them and three lives are lost. The youngest is 8 years of age. So, you know, the old saying is true, boys will be boys, and this kind of scene of young kids playing football on frozen lakes and the like across the island of Ireland was very common and sometimes did end in that kind of tragedy.
Do have a terrible tendency for misadventure, unfortunately. At one stage, and this is one of the more remarkable things about it, particularly given the setting and the time and what has just gone on and the neighbouring, the relationships between this island and the one next door, there is one point in the middle of this in which we ask the neighbours for help.
Yeah, we're something of a political pariah on the world stage in the late 40s, and even our relationship with America was shattered and would remain shattered into the 60s.
Yeah, because we wouldn't get involved.
Because we wouldn't get involved, and I think it took the Kennedy presidency to rebuild any kind of link with the Americans. But, you know, the relationship with Britain was particularly bad, and Churchill had even attacked us in his famous victory speech, saying we were frolicking to our heart's content with the Germans and the Japanese, whatever he meant by that. But what the crisis did demonstrate was that, you know, despite this absolute horror of what everyone in Europe had just witnessed, there was a deep humanity in the face of this kind of suffering. Mm. And one devised plan would involve the RAF, Britain's Royal Air Force, being brought into Ireland, basically dropping food parcels onto particularly badly affected villages in Wicklow. So can you imagine the idea of the RAF flying over rural Irish villages and dropping food?
We won't use our own defence forces, but we'll use the ones next door.
Get the RAF in to do it for us. But in the end, we didn't actually need them. I mean, the CIA and others very bravely battled their way into kind of isolated towns. I love the idea of these people, you know, smashing their way into these frozen villages to assist people. But the fact that the RAF were willing to do that, I think, is quite remarkable. It's a lovely story in itself.
In the middle of all of this, there are still, events happen. The state, the business of the state still goes on, and there's still governance or whatever, and people live and people die. There is one big funeral.
Yeah, it's amazing.
In the middle of all of this. And despite the conditions, the turnout is huge.
It's amazing. The 30th of January, in the middle of the worst storm Ireland has ever and hopefully will ever see, the most divisive figure, I think, one of the most divisive figures of 20th century Irish politics dies, Big Jim Larkin. And Larkin, it's probably fair to say, was something of a storm himself. But tens of thousands of people come out onto the streets for Larkin's funeral. I mean, people are advised, do not leave your house. And yet tens of thousands of people come out. He gets a guard of honour of 1,200 dockers and this enormous kind of political pageantry. They bring him to Glasnevin Cemetery, Starry Plough coffin on the flag on an absolutely freezing cold day. The mourners are just slipping and sliding everywhere as they make their way out to the cemetery. And I always wonder, geez, what kind of crowd would Larkin have got on a sunny day, because people couldn't travel from the rest of Ireland. But you know, tens of thousands of Dubliners, some say more, nearly 100,000, are out on the streets to bury Larkin in the middle of all of this, which is incredible.
Remarkable stuff. Now, the most recent snow that we had, the Beast from the East and Ophelia, was, I can't remember whether, actually, it's terrible to think about how regular occurrences extreme weather is now. Yes. I can't remember whether it's Ophelia or Emma was the one of the big snow alongside the Beast from the East. But nonetheless, the abiding memory that I have after all of that, and I was buried in Ag House alongside the emergency people for 3 or 4 days, my memory of the afterwards is the concern around water supply, flooding in areas where the snow was thawing, and then the water pipes bursting in areas where they thawed out. What was the big impact after 47?
The big problem in Ireland was a food crisis. And I mean, when something like this hits, when unprecedented weather like this hits, your first instinct is, how do I stay alive and how do my family stay alive? What you don't tend to think about, even people in rural Ireland who are dependent on it, is agriculture. So cattle and sheep, you know, are dead in their thousands. And, you know, that means that there's this resulting food crisis that goes on into subsequent months. So in many ways, you know, while there's tragedy in Dublin, if you live in a city during this crisis, you're quite fortunate. It's rural Ireland who feel the effect, and who feel the effect for months and months afterwards.
Worth noting that this wasn't just some sort of freak weather snap which affected Ireland and Ireland alone. There were other parts of the world that were getting a pretty torrid time as well.
There were people convinced that God had sent this to punish the Irish. You know, people living here thought this was the end of the world. But I mean, all over the world, they experienced absolutely shocking weather. They had a fuel crisis on the neighbouring island, and then it made its way to America. And like January 48, America is hammered, New York in particular. And there's just a beautiful account of it from Life magazine. At 3:20 in the morning, it began to snow in New York. By the time most New Yorkers were going to work, the blanket lay 3 inches deep. But the city, used to ignoring all natural phenomena and reassured by a weather forecast of occasional flurries, went about its business. But as the day wore on, the characteristic blasé attitude vanished. The air filled with snowflakes, so huge and thick, it was almost impossible to see across the street. And Manhattan, I mean, the centre of the world economy, New York City just ground to a halt in January 48. So there's great images of New York City just covered in snow, cars, buses, abandoned. This happened everywhere, not just here.
25.8 inches in less than 24
incredible.
Hours.
Incredible. Imagine Manhattan, anyone that's been there, under 25.8 inches of snow in 24 hours.
There are some sort of knock-on effects today. Obviously, this isn't ancient history, but it is, you know, 72 years ago. But it still arguably has an impact on how the government today approaches crises like this.
It does. And, you know, a lot of younger listeners in particular, I mean, we kind of find it curious seeing how we respond to snowstorms or severe weathers now. You know, you have politicians on the news looking very busy, and, you know, memes about bread and, you know, all the Twitter humour that comes out now whenever we get bad weather. But I mean, for me, the national emergency centres and the constant updates from government ministers, we should remember that this crisis is actually still in the living memory of a lot of people in Ireland today. And I think those who lived through 1947, not only will they never forget it, but, you know, they'll never doubt the ability of severe weather to disrupt or take innocent lives.
Yeah, it's certainly easily forgotten. Obviously, this, you know, white 47, if you want to call it that, if you had so many blizzards in the space of a couple of weeks, obviously it's different to what we get these days. But part of the reason why that we don't have the mass fatalities these days is because we're better at communicating to people and telling them just to stay at home if they're ever in any danger. Donald, thank you for that reminder of all of that. Donald Fallon is a historian. He is the creator of the Come Here To Me blog. He's also the author of the Come Here To Me books, volumes 1 and 2 of which are available in all good bookshops, and probably some terrible ones this time of year as well. He's also the host of the Three Castles Burning podcast, which you'll find on Apple Podcasts.